All right, good evening. I am Melissa Irvin, the chair of the Planning Commission. I am going to call the meeting to order at 6:33 p.m. on February 7th. First, we're going to do a roll call. If each commissioner would just say their name and that they are here.
I'm going to do the roll call.
That's right. You get to do that.
No problem. Chair Irvin?
Present.
Commissioner Eder?
Present.
Commissioner Baker?
I'm here.
Commissioner Kendall?
Here.
Commissioner Hessel?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum. You may proceed.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the Planning Commission meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from the December 6th and the January 3rd meetings? Are there any changes to either of those? Seeing no changes, can I get a motion to approve both?
I would move that we approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes from December 6th and January 3rd.
I second the motion.
First by Chair Hessel, second by Chair Kendall. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any in opposition?
This is Mike. I'm almost abstain.
Okay. So please note that abstention. And the meeting minutes are approved. Moving right along into the public hearing. Is there anything special for me to read for this one?
No, this is a legislative hearing, so you just need to go through the agenda there.
Okay.
Open the public hearing, then you'll do your declarations of conflicts.
Perfect. All right. This is the public hearing for the City of Madras Development Code text amendments to bring consistency and density requirements with the development code and between the comprehensive plan and to refine how density is calculated. File number TA-23-1. This is a legislative hearing. I will open the public hearing. A declaration of conflicts of interest. Does any commissioner have any actual economic conflict of interest to discuss? I believe all commissioners say they do not. Is anyone in the audience want to contest that? Seeing none, we can move on to the staff report and applicant testimony.
Thank you, Chair Irvine. The applicant is the City of Madras. City staff has initiated amendments to our development code and comprehensive plan. First, want to say thank you, everyone, for coming out this evening. I suspect that after a thorough explanation, it may be a little bit more boring than what people want. But nonetheless, maybe I should start with just a high-level overview and probably why everyone are here. So in July of 2022, the city passed and made effective certain development code amendments that we in short refer to those as the middle housing code amendments. And there were some comprehensive plan changes along with that as well. Those were pretty sweeping changes to our development code in the sense that they, in short, identified new housing types that could be permitted in each of the three of the city's residential zones. It established new design standards for those new forms of housing, and it certainly did so in a manner compliant with state law, which we're required to have clear and objective standards for needed housing. In Madras, based on our comprehensive plan, all housing types and at all income levels is needed housing. One of the things that we needed to do with those code and comprehensive plan amendments was to establish density ranges in our comprehensive plan. Staff had been working on several projects related to zone changes, also working with developers on master plans. And when you take on those sorts of projects, you need to analyze the impact of those zone changes or master plans. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to figure out if the proposed development is within the minimum and maximum density ranges. We didn't have that at the time. So we established in the comprehensive plan a minimum and maximum residential density standard for all three of the residential zones. The development code identified a minimum density standard, same as identified in the comprehensive plan, but it did not identify the maximum residential density identified in the comprehensive plan. Looking back on that, we should have added that maximum density standard. So that's what we're proposing. I can go into a little more detail here in a minute. But under state law, when a city changes development regulations, zoning, and other important planning actions, if there is a potential for the reduced, I'm going to pause here for a second, reduction in use of the land, meaning you would take away a right to use the land. So if we amended, I'm not saying we're doing this, but if, for example, we had the ability to develop apartments within the R1 zone, and then all of a sudden we were proposing to change it so you could no longer doing that, there would be a reduction of development rights. So under state law, we need to give notice to all property owners that are affected. This standard also includes if there's a potential reduction in property value. You'll recall that the voters of Oregon passed ballot measure 56 that passed this requirement. So we're fulfilling the state requirement. And because we're changing the density standard in the development code by adding that development standard, it's a conservative interpretation, it's a new regulation. So therefore, it's further regulating the use of land and therefore requires that notice that we sent to all property owners in the residential zones. There's about 1,200 property owners. So we sent the same letter. I would note that under state law and with the guidance of the city attorney, we follow basically the template that's in statute and provided that notice to make sure that we followed the minimum standard. I would guess everyone in the audience today would say that notice was sorely lacking, doesn't make any sense, and probably why they're here this evening. So I'll personally apologize for that. However, it's a requirement of state law, and I hope that my staff report and discussion this evening will address your concerns. Going back to the proposed amendments, we are proposing to make these changes to the comprehensive plan and development code because we anticipate in the future that we're going to have, again, zone changes, master plans, and other projects that will require us to analyze the impact of a development. And the addition of the maximum density standard in the development code that's already in the comprehensive plan is needed. And the reason for that is when someone files certain land use applications, we are not required in all cases to review that proposal's consistency with the comprehensive plan. We only look at the standards in the development code. So if you don't have that maximum density standard that's identified in your comprehensive plan, in the development code, you are not fully implementing your comprehensive plan in your development code. Another way to say that is they're not consistent with each other. So that's really what we're doing this evening. I'll note that there's a change to the portion of land that's included in that calculation of residential density for properties that have slopes greater than 25%. We exclude that land from that calculation, okay? So that is really the proposal. We're doing this because really we want to implement the comprehensive plan effectively. I would also say that the number goes back to some estimates that the city's consultant and staff calculated when we were figuring out what density ranges we wanted for the city. And that calculation was not purely arithmetic, but rather understanding that when a residential development is proposed, there are a lot of different standards that apply to that. So not only do the building setbacks apply, but the height standards, lot coverage requirement, you have parking requirements. For certain types of developments, such as townhomes, cottage clusters, and apartments, you have an open space requirement so that those residents have somewhere to recreate and play. Also part of that is the density standard and all the design standards. But really, all those standards together regulate the density of land. So it's not as if you just look at the density standard, the minimum, maximum, figure out a development's density by going through the calculations. It's not that simple. So a developer, when they're proposing to develop a lot, they need to factor in all those regulations. Another way to say that is someone could propose to develop a property at 19 dwelling units an acre, and they may fall within the density range, right, for that zone. But they may be not meeting the standard for parking or setbacks or height or something like that. That doesn't mean they get to develop that density. They have to meet all of their requirements. So there's a lot of different factors that go into calculating the density of residential development. And I want to be clear, there's enough people here, appreciate your time, so I want to be as clear and explanative as possible. By density, we mean dwelling units per acre, per gross acre, is the way our code is written. So examples that you see in the community are really few and far between to even come close to the 24 dwelling units an acre. Our newest multifamily residential development, I believe it's named the Heights at Yarrow, at the east end of Yarrow Avenue, I believe that's at 17 or 18 dwelling units an acre. It doesn't come close to 24, okay? So those are three-story apartment buildings with 24 dwelling units in each building. So I always like to give an example of what that looks like on the ground. I know one of our commissioners reached out to staff today and said, hey, is there an example of what this looks like? And really, we do have one example, but it doesn't come close to coming near the maximum residential density standard that we're proposing. So that's kind of what we have in our community. If I was a property owner, presumably a lot of the audience this evening, how would this matter? Why would I care about this? Well, I think that this standard will be applying to mostly large tracts of undeveloped land. So if you've got, you know, an acre plus of land and you want to either develop a subdivision with single family detached or some other townhomes, cottage clusters or apartments, this is going to apply. It would still apply for what we call infill projects. So maybe there's a vacant lot in your neighborhood that's been around a long time, and someone wants to build a duplex, triplex, maybe even a fourplex on it. That standard may come into play, but likely not even going to come close to exceeding the maximum standard, right? Again, all the standards apply for residential development, not just the density standards. So I would also say that oftentimes we hear from citizens and property owners where you're changing density or zoning, where there's a situation where there might be an increased level of development or density next to maybe lower density housing. We have mechanisms in place to make sure that those two developments are compatible. So one of the things that the city passed in 2022 was the residential setback standard, where above a certain height above the ground on the side yard, if they want to go up a second or third story, they need to move the building back, kind of give it a wedding cake kind of look. So you just can't have one wall that's two or maybe three stories high next to the 5-foot setback. So that's one important compatibility standard that we have on the books today that regulates the mass of a building so that you don't have large residential development next to lower density residential development. We think that's really important. Compatibility between developments is really important, maintains integrity in the neighborhoods, things like that. So this evening, staff is requesting, or I should say recommending, that the Planning Commission make a recommendation to the City Council to approve the proposed development code and comprehensive plan amendments. The City Council will hold a hearing on this on February 13th. I got that wrong. They will hold a hearing soon on that. I'll check and report back to the commission on that. Is 13th? Okay. Thank you. Staff's confirming it's 13th of February at 5:30 p.m. right here. So that is the proposal. Before you proceed with the public hearing this evening and accept public testimony, is there any maybe additional questions that maybe the commissioners have to clarify?
Nick, can you just quantify the changes that are being made in this proposal so that it is out there? Because you've given us some great background, but yeah, in your discussion, you didn't actually specifically say what those changes are. So if you could just talk about those specifically, that would be great.
Yeah, we'll have Fatma go through those. Okay, so go up a little bit. You went too far, Fatma. Yep. Okay. So we are first in section 18.05.30 definitions, changing the definitions of maximum and minimum density, where we are clarifying that portions of lot that exceed 25% or that are in a flood hazard area are not included in the density calculation. Secondly, you'll see there on table 18.15.040-3, at the bottom of the page there, we are there changing the minimum density and maximum density as shown there. So for the public that doesn't look at these code changes very often, where you have underlined font, that's where text is being proposed to be added. And text that has the line through it or strike through, that is the text that's being proposed to be removed. Moving on, Fatma, we are in table 18.15.070. We are changing the minimum density, changing that wording to refer to the definition in the definition sections of the code. And we are also clarifying that there's no maximum density standard for residential in the commercial zones where allowed. Part of the 2022 amendments also allowed standalone residential in the C2 and C3 zones. Those are your two downtown zones. And so we don't want that density standard there because you really do want intense development in your downtown. More people living there. Hopefully working, dining, shopping, all that great stuff for our downtown area. And then we're identifying in 18.30.191. Again, we are identifying that the minimum maximum density of the residential zones applies to that development, and removing language that would be in conflict or confusing. The same with 1830-192, the cottage cluster design development standards, again, clarifying that the maximum density standards in the applicable zone applies. Moving on, Fatma. And then what appears to be the end, 1860.100 lot standards. Again, we are changing this standard so that, as it says, there are more than 50% of a lot or parcel must be comprised of slopes of less than 25%. So, in effect, what this is saying is we're not counting the portion of a lot that has a slope over 25% in that calculation. I believe that concludes the amendments. Oh, except for the comprehensive plan. Scroll down. This one's a tough one. Go back up, Fatma. This is a really small change. Yes, there you go. So we are changing the density, adding the Garrett, our city attorney. I know he's on the call. I'm not seeing the very minute change to the comprehensive plan. Can you help me remember what that small change is?
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, I believe all we're changing is the R3 to match the density, the same densities that we're proposing for the code?
That was the intention, yes.
Yeah.
So that would be the last sentence in that R3 planned residential development?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I apologize for that not being, having strike through underlined font to clearly identify the change.
Thank you, that's very helpful. Yeah. And just for clarification, the changes that we're talking about related to density, there is not a corresponding change in the floor area ratio. So we still have the same standards as far as how much building can be on a lot as previously approved.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to regulate the amount of the square footage of buildings on a piece of land. We use lot coverage, which is the building footprint. So it's the percentage of the building footprint related to the total area of the property. We do not have a floor area ratio. That is a standard that oftentimes bigger cities and more urban areas use to require development above two stories. We don't have that. Yeah. So good question.
Thank you.
This is Commissioner Kendall. You have minimum lot sizes, 75, 75, and 6,000, but no actual numbers for the maximum?
Correct. Well, yes and no.
You didn't have a maximum. That's why we're going through this, correct? We
correct.
Didn't put that in our comprehensive plan
yeah.
prior. But we have the minimum. And then number two of the first page says maximum lot coverage, 50%, 50%, 50% total lot area. Is that what we're adding in now?
No, you already have the lot coverage standard of 50% for all three zones.
Okay, so...
Well, you're adding a maximum density standard, so the maximum dwelling units per gross acre that okay. a residential development can propose.
And that's... where we were at the end here, where it talked about the different R1, R2, R3, 7 to 21.7 dwelling units.
That's correct.
That's our maximum
yeah,
that we're...
Yeah, that's correct.
And the same thing with R2 and 1, are those also the last sentences being
yes.
added?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any more clarifications of the applicant testimony from the commission? Okay, so then we move on to public testimony.
Yes.
Okay, so to be clear, in public testimony, I think normally we have I can't remember how many minutes we usually limit, 3 minutes. So when you come up to the front, we definitely welcome your testimony. It is a testimony. It is not necessarily a conversation, and that's just how this works. The commissioners will have a chance to listen to what your questions are, and we may be able to respond to them later on in the discussion, but it is important that you address the commission during your testimony. If somebody has spoken previously with your same points, you may come forward and list your name and your address, but you may just say, my point has been already iterated by so-and-so, as opposed to having to hear the same points over and over. And I do apologize that we will cut people off at 3 minutes, just to be consistent. We do want to hear what you have to say, but we will do that with the number of people in the audience today. So again, when you come forward, please state your name and your address for the record into the microphone, and then address the commission with your testimony. Does that sound fair? All right, so I welcome the first person to come forward.
Good evening.
If you would just state your name as well into the record.
Yes, sir. Don Blaho, 1040 Southeast Daisy Court. All of the things mentioned today is still very vague to me. I mean, my concern is what type of development is going to go to the land adjacent to my property, whereas it will raise or lower my tax base. That's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on forward. And state your name and your address, please.
My name is Isidoro. I live in 725 Southwest First. My question is, all this, I probably misunderstood the whole thing, but all this development around and the density, my concern is that requires higher insurance. And because they get so close to each other, those homes and those apartments, that requires better equipment for the fire department, and that increases our insurance, our taxes, which has been up and up and up for the past several years. And the existing city has been the same, but the taxes going up and up, and all these developers, they're making tons of money, which is the business. But if a homeowner comes up and asks for a permit or something in their property, it's always been a real headache for the homeowners. But those developers, they get away with everything. So what is the benefit for the city? Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Andrew Garcia, 703 Southwest Cedar Hill Drive. It's more not a question but an observation. I'm a naturalized U.S. citizen, born and raised in Tijuana. When I was born, the city was about 600,000 people living there. As of now, there's a little bit over 2 million people. And the reason I say this is because when I lived there, I saw how the city allowed many developments here and there. They saw a spot that was open. They said, let's build apartments or let's build another house complex or whatever. And even today, as I go back to visit family, places that I saw that no way I ever imagined that they were going to build something. They now have built something. Now, And the reason I say this is because from my in-laws' house, which is where we stay when we go down there, to my brother's house, which is about 6 or 7 miles away, it takes us about anywhere between 30 minutes to an hour to get there. And the reason is because they have all these developments happening, but they have no roads, no, you know, stuff like that. And when they try to build it, it takes a year or two because there's a bunch of cars trying to go in and out. And it was all because they said, well, let's build more houses here and here and here, places where they shouldn't have. I see that my block and around the houses that I live in, they're already built three houses there. And it seems like if they're going to build behind our house, which there's wildlife there that we get to see every spring and summer, that we think they're going to get, you know, killed or move somewhere else. So my concern is wildlife, really, and how the city is growing, which is great, but I don't see the actual infrastructure of new roads, new blocks, roundabouts, you name it. There's nothing, and it's already messy as it is. So it's more like a cry out for help, as in, if you're going to allow several developments to happen, you guys need to, you know, put on your thinking hats and start planning roads, because it's going to get messy. And I say this because, again, where I live, where I was raised, right now, it's really, really messy. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Do I have anyone else?
Please, why don't you sit down, please, sir?
What's that?
Sit down so you can speak into the mic.
Thank you. We can hear them, but I didn't know you couldn't.
Brian Silbernagel, 10197 Southwest Woodward Road. Talked about Measure 56 and the potential of decreasing property value. What are, I guess, the assessed value getting back to the zoning of that? If our property can decrease in value with new zoning, our property can obviously increase with zoning. And I haven't seen anything to show what the assessed value is going to be on the new zoning.
Thank you.
Hello? I can't find my the thing that says I want to speak. I'm up here.
Vicki, this is Nick Snead, the Community Development Director. We're going to go through the audience first, and then we'll pivot over to those online. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Anybody can understand. This room echoes. Whoever built a square room for a meeting room is an idiot. It shouldn't be parallel. The walls should be this way so it doesn't echo. Okay, my name is Marie Easter. Can everybody hear me? Is it? Okay, I have an opposite problem here. I have a whole city block that I own on one side of 16th Street by the hospital between A and B. I own that whole block. My house is in the middle. I would love to build duplexes on both sides or more housing, but the city of Madras is making it impossible for me. There is a sewer easement to, I might as well read this or I'll be here all night. Okay, my name, let's see, I own city block near, okay, my house is in the middle of the block and I or someone could build 4 more living units on that block or more, except that the public sewer easement, which is located on 6 properties to the west, on Hillcrest Street, has been blocked by fences, not gates, and even a concrete wall across the 15-foot easement. Besides that, there are several sheds and a small greenhouse on the easement, Plus, there are pine trees and an elm tree, which is a very aggressive tree. And the roots on top of the sewer line, and they've compromised it, the sewer line. The sewer line has to be located to the west and not under 16th Street because it is downhill. They won't pump sewage uphill. So there it is. It's under these people's properties. Now, several years ago, when my drain lines and sewer backed up, and I had the lines reamed out, the Public Works Department came here to look things over, and Jeff Hurd said to me, they'll deal with clearing the easement when it becomes an emergency. Well, last summer, the sewer backed up into a sink and the downstairs shower in my house, and I had to move into a hotel until it could be cleared. The company from Bend, called Mr. Reuter, found that tree roots had separated a pipe at a joint, and it had to be lined with a kind of epoxy material, and the whole line to the city's manhole was cleared out. But it all cost about $5,000, and they said the tree roots would keep on growing wherever they entered that line. Fortunately, that break was on my property, so I could fix it. The whole plastic line, which is over 50 years old, has to be replaced. And new line added to accommodate new construction to A Street to the north. A Street is where the hospital is. So you know what area we're talking about. That lot's vacant because nobody can build on it because there's no sewer.
Marie, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt you. You are past your 3 minutes.
Oh, dear.
And I also believe that your testimony is not directly related to the decision that's before us. I know that
talking
you may
about
get there.
Density. I would love to construct more housing, and I'm being hampered by the city. The city will not write a letter to those property owners to tell them that there's a sewer easement in their backyard, and they need to let people in there.
It sounds like you have.
I'd like to help out with the housing problem.
Yes, yeah, so
to build something there, and I'm prohibited because I can't get to the sewer. Now I've hired a lawyer. Your city attorney told me they won't get involved. They won't write a letter to the people saying you got to clear that sewer easement. So I had to hire an attorney, and he's the mayor of Redmond. Imagine how they feel. How Madras is preventing people from building.
Yes,
when we need housing.
Well, this sounds like a very unfortunate event, and I believe that we need to arrange a time to speak with you specifically about this issue in a different setting.
The city needs to help me notify people that they've got to clear that easement.
Okay. So I think this is something that we can circle back with Nick about, and I appreciate you coming. Thank you.
Can I leave this with you folks?
Yes.
Then you can get to the right people, maybe.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie. Thank you, Marie. All right, next up.
My name is Cheryl Noble. I live at 294 Northeast Clearview Court. I just wanted to mention what would have been helpful for me to come here tonight. I would have liked to have seen some kind of maybe a map or something that would have shown where my residence is and those who were contacted for tonight's meeting, and seen something put on there that was in the future plan about possibilities that might have impacted my taxes going up, you know, whatever. That would have been very helpful for me to have in my hands, and I'm sure it would have drawn out more direct questions from the audience, too. I really came here not knowing for sure what we're doing tonight, and I think there's a lot more people in here that feel that way. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Again, thank you for your public comments. I know it takes a lot of bravery to be up here.
Let's pivot over. There's a couple people online.
That's correct.
And so if you would allow, maybe we could have our associate planner call them by name.
Perfect. That sounds wonderful. Thank you.
Vicki, you may speak. Vicki Johnson.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Vicki Johnson. I live at 209 Northeast 11th Street. And my comments have to do with the work that's being done now. I acknowledge the need for housing in Madras and also the hard work that's been done up till now. I've looked carefully at the plans, you know, that have been developed. It looks like the nicer homes that have been that are up there now, they're putting up their own signs for cars that are speeding through to slow down since the new developments have gone up. So it seems like that's a concern. The parking spaces at the place now, they're really too small for any nicer cars. And that's being stated in some of the comments in the development itself. The other buildings that this management company manages, there's a lot of complaints. I'm concerned about there might be necessary if a fire were to come in from the west, there's a concern about where the people would go, how they would get out. And if there's been a traffic survey that's been done. And then also just about what everybody else has talked about kind of is about infrastructure, you know, with schools and police. I mean, with a pool, we're already having to, you know, have more, you know, money raised to put into that. I mean, it seemed like we'd be going backwards, you know, to try to backfill, you know, to have schools built or whatever's needed for the people coming in. And also Highway 97, I mean, as it is now, we're having wrecks, you know, where people are being, you know, badly hurt, you know, and dying. And how are we going to manage that traffic going back and forth to Redmond and Bend, you know, with additional traffic that's going to be coming in that way, not to mention, you know, going, you know, just in and
Vicki,
out.
Vicki, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your 3 minutes are up.
Okay.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you.
For those attending online, I'll be calling name. If you have any comments, you may speak. Abigail R. Brian P.
No comment for me.
Thank you. Connie. Connie Berman. Gigi.
Hi, yes, thank you. I'm Gigi Seekonen, and I'm attending here in the interest of Madras United Methodist Church, which is at 49 Northeast 12th Street. thank you for allowing the Zoom option. That's appreciated. And I'm not sure that it's directly pertinent to tonight's conversation, but we have had conversations about potentially partitioning the property where our church is located with an eye towards, is there some sort of specialized housing need in our community that our property could help meet? And there are no immediate plans. It's just conversation at this point. So I just hope that our development codes and comprehensive plan can make room for all sorts of housing needs in our community while keeping in mind all these other very legitimate concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi.
Nora?
No comment.
Thank you. LH? Chair, these are all the participants online on Zoom today.
Great, thank you. All right, again, thank you for those who came and thank you for your comments. We are now going to move on to our staff comment section. So this is a chance where our staff gets to talk a little bit about some of the comments that have been made, some of the questions that came forward to Nick, but this is a chance for us to talk about this proposal during this meeting. So let's go ahead. Which commissioner would like to go first if you've got comments or questions?
Chair, did you want me to respond to, as best as possible, some of the comments before we deliberate?
Sure. I guess I forgot that we can go back to that. Yes, if you would like to address anything.
Sure, no sweat.
Please do.
Yeah. First of all, I will do my best to respond to the comments. I may skip or otherwise, but that's not intentional. The Measure 56 notice, the requirement is if there's a potential for property values to be decreased. It's not actual property values. So when we consulted the city attorney about this and also considering that the proposed maximum density standard may reduce development, that if there was no standard, arguably there may be more development rights. So the proposal may reduce those development rights. We, in abundance of caution, issued the Measure 56 notice. It's not that we actually think that people's land values will be reduced. I actually don't believe there's a reduction in development rights because, as I've said, there's a lot of standards that apply to residential development beyond the density standards. There was some concern about compatibility and safety. So for safety with respect to the fire codes and insurance, I'm not aware of any requirement for existing property owners to carry more or be forced to carry more insurance as a result of development adjacent to them. Keep in mind that the building setback standards in our development code and almost every other city and county in the United States follows the minimum of 5 feet setback. And that is widely held as an appropriate standard based on the fire code. And you can have building setbacks that are less than 5 feet, but so does the requirements of increasing fire ratings so that fire doesn't spread to other properties. So oftentimes the insurance issues don't come up because of the building code requirements. And frankly, modern building standards are quite safe compared to even 30 years ago. Just the materials are far, far superior in terms of fire protection. There was concern about, parking and things like that. We have not changed our parking standards since I've been here in any sort of way where we require more parking or less parking. We did make the changes for the downtown area, but for residential, you know, it's always been, as I recall, about one space per dwelling unit. So we haven't changed that. I know there was a question or concern for really environmental considerations and large-scale urban development, and how what I understood is a lack of planning, a lack of consideration for transportation, sewer, water, environmental concerns, access to open space, all those things together we just call land use planning in the state of Oregon, which is extremely different than most states in the United States, and certainly different than Mexico. And the reason for that is the state of Oregon, just to pause for a second and have a mini educational moment, state of Oregon in 1972 instituted comprehensive planning program that starts with 19 statewide planning goals and protection of farm and forest land, protection of environmental resources, including water, including open spaces, including wetlands, all the like are protected. Those are really protected and addressed in our comprehensive plan. Drinking water is, of course, been something in the news, you know, of late, you know, all over the world. We don't have a comprehensive plan without consideration for how much water is available, and will our needed development be able to utilize that? Is there a sufficient supply? In other words, we aren't permitting a lot of development for which there is very few water, very little water available. And certainly the protection of those water sources, right? So one of the things that Jefferson County does, not only in the building department, environmental health, and I dare to say our commissioner, Dr. Baker, oversees in partnership, is our septic systems in the city and in the county. And part of that is a strict review for making sure that those septic systems are appropriate, don't leach onto other properties, and certainly don't leach into our drinking systems, public drinking systems, and wells, private wells. So I feel pretty confident that the concerns by our citizens related to those planning issues are adequately addressed in our community. It is appropriate to have that concern, but we do have commensurate plans that have those protections in there for them. I know there was concern for, you know, whether property values are going to increase and, you know, funding other things. Again, I think the concern really comes from the Measure 56 notice. The standard is, would the proposed changes potentially reduce the property values? And the answer is, in a very conservative response, yes, it might, but not likely. Not likely. Okay. I know someone had a concern for a map of the properties that were sent the notice. We sent those to every single property that's either zoned R1, R2, or R3. Those are our three residential zones. And that's about 1,200 properties. So, you know, if we were to send you a map, it might be a little bit difficult to read, because it's really almost a citywide map. So anyone with a residentially zoned piece of land received the notice. Again, I apologize at the beginning. You know, we do need to meet the minimum requirements for the notice. Certainly you can go above and beyond the notice requirements, but at, I think it was 83 cents per letter, and sending 1,200 of those letters to our property owners, we need to also be mindful of our resources of the Community Development Department. Provide the minimum notice, provide the opportunity, the information on how to contact staff, how to participate in the public hearing. All those things were in the mail or the letter. So with that, that's staff response to the comments. Is there anything that maybe I didn't address, or maybe additional questions that you have?
Nick, this is Mike. Just a quick clarification, lots of comments on this Measure 56 letter that went out. I didn't see that in the packet, so I'm not familiar with what that language would look like. Did I miss that, or was it in the electronic version and not was what was presented today?
It was not included in the packet. We typically don't include the notices in the packet. We'll have staff try to pick that up and display that on the screen for everyone. But it's a one-page letter. Citizens who have spoken this evening are not wrong. It is rather bland, and it does not include enough specificity to anyone's liking. But again, I want to understand that, or ask for understanding that we need to meet a minimum legal requirement. We could have done a little bit more, but we have to balance our resources.
And as a quick follow-up with the contact information provided, was there any requests before tonight's meeting on clarification of information, or was this?
Oh yeah, no, we fielded probably 24 phone calls,
okay.
probably about a dozen emails. Staff did our best to respond to those emails and phone calls. Is there a period of time when we weren't fully staffed, and I did my best, as well as three other jobs, to do that. So I did, in every case, I spoke with them anyone on the phone, responded to an email. When I provided them a thorough response, like I've shared this evening, there was no additional questions on those. No one identified after my response, well, I'm opposed to it, or something like that. Oftentimes we said, I understand, thank you for explaining that, and then they went on to proceed their lack of satisfaction with the notice that was provided. So,
and one final clarification, the questions that were asked by call or email were represented also here this evening.
And most of which were, I don't understand this, what does this mean? And I think part of that is, we've got a community full of great people that do amazing things in our community from 8 to 5, most of which are not city planners and probably not attorneys. So when they read this, they oftentimes are not understanding some of the terminology or jargon. So without fault, their questions are appropriate. Yes, thank you. We did also clarify, I noted that the City Council will hold a hearing on February 13th. That is incorrect. It'll be February 27th. Again, the City Council will hold a public hearing on this matter on February 27th at 5:30 p.m. here at City Hall, here in the Council Chambers.
Thank you. Nick, anyone else on the Commission want to comment or...
This is Commissioner Kendall. The way I heard one of the comments was that the added building and their concerns about Highway 97. And I hope I heard that correctly, that, as we increase and increase our ability to build more housing in the area, that would also increase more traffic. And hopefully I understood that what they were saying correctly. I don't know if the highway situation is something that we address on a city or planning commission level. It strikes me as being maybe more ODOT. If you could comment on that, and maybe that would help answer some of the questions for the...
Sure. That's a great question. I maybe didn't interpret the comment the same way, so thank you for bringing that to my attention. The city does have a 20-year transportation system plan. We refer to it in short as the TSP. It's a 20-year plan. It includes Highway 97. And so, again, the state of Oregon is somewhat unique. We've been doing this for over 50 years in the sense that we plan for our transportation needs based on our land uses. So Oregon was the first in the nation to connect land use and transportation. In other words, making sure our transportation systems will support our planned land uses. The city adopted a new TSP in, I believe, 2017. As part of that effort and that 20-year plan, we did look at Highway 97, and there's quite a bit of work that goes into that. And I'll just summarize it quickly so people understand that, so that I don't have to say, believe me. One of the things we look at is existing traffic volumes on Highway 97 and on the city's arterial streets, our high-volume streets. For example, J Street, City View, B Street, things like that. That's the existing conditions. Then we look at how much land is, you know, not developed within our community and what types of traffic would be generated by that. And one of the ways that you do that is having density assumptions for example, residential development, commercial lands, industrial lands, and things like that. We also then forecast, based on population growth, what the volume of traffic will be in the future, and we look at if there's any differences between, you know, population increase, plan development, and where there's inconsistencies, we look at making changes to that plan. For example, there's an intersection that maybe need to be improved. In the city of Madras, that oftentimes looks like, well, instead of a intersection that has a two-way stop on it of two collector streets, maybe we need to change that to a roundabout in the future. We have a policy against signals. So we look at how we can accommodate more volume in the community, as well as looking at bike and pedestrian facilities, making sure our community has adequate pedestrian facilities to walk around our community, not just the downtown, not just the neighborhoods, but to get between those areas. And same with our cycling needs. So bike paths, so our cyclists can use those off network or don't have to use a street to get around our community. There's multi-use paths. Same time, in all of that, our transportation system plan, I'll brag for a second, was the first in the state of Oregon to integrate our safe routes to school plan into our transportation system plan. So we had provisions in our plan to make sure we have safe vehicular, bicycle, and pedestrian transportation facilities to make sure our kiddos can get safe to school and get home safely every day. Pretty proud of that. So we do have a transportation system plan. We are working with ODOT right now. In fact, the Planning Commission will see that refinement plan probably sometime after June, before October of this year, for the South Madras Concept Area Refinement Plan. So that's the Fairgrounds Road and South Transportation Plan for Highway 97 and all the land in between. Figuring out, again, how we handle more volume on the highways. I haven't talked to anyone yet that says traffic's decreasing on the highways. It's always increasing, a lot more trucks. At the same time, we have a community to live in, and we want that community livable, right? So we're developing a plan to figure out how we do that. So that's part of our, that will be part of our transportation system plan. It'll be an amendment to it, okay? So don't know who asked the question, but great question, and I'm sorry I missed it.
Okay, Nick, thank you for your comments. I heard you cover the questions relating to parking and traffic and ODOT. Just wanted to reiterate that within a larger development plan, specific developers have to meet all of the standards, and a lot of those standards include making sure that the sewer meets capacity in those areas, that the drainage in those new developments work, that ODOT does a traffic study related to any new larger scale developments. So I just wanted to specifically say that if there is a newer development coming in, there is a lot of work that goes into those bigger developments that would bring in substantial new traffic and issues. And specifically the Yarrow development, when they put in the I don't think they call them officially apartments, do they? Apartments. There was a lot of traffic studies related to that, making sure that the sewer capacity met its needs. Now, you can still say maybe or not you don't agree, but there are standards that were met by those developers. And there are standards that ODOT sets for road width and all of that for any type of new big development. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear, that this doesn't change any of those very high-level requirements for bigger developments.
That is correct. In fact, the Planning Commission, City Council will be presented an annexation and master plan proposal this spring to annex over 20 acres. And we are spending lots of time figuring out how the transportation system works, sewer, water, all the like, will work so that when they bring that land in and develop it, that we have the adequate infrastructure to serve it, right? And that's really important. And so thank you for that clarification.
One more comment that was brought up was the concern about how the infrastructures and fires and the fire department and different things like that. And I'm assuming also that as we grow, we are also in touch with our fire department to make sure that we have the adequate accommodations to make sure that we have the right amount of people, that it grows along with our cities.
That's correct.
Okay.
And nearly all of our land use applications are sent to our public agencies that have a stake in development, including the fire department. And we ask them to review the proposal and provide comments under a certain timeline. It's usually, I think, 10 or 14 days. Don't remember offhand. So they have an opportunity to provide comment in the land use review. Then after land use, when they need to move forward with building permits, they need to file a second application with the city. We review the conditions of approval from the land use decision and that. If there's a requirement related to the fire department, the city doesn't make sure that condition of approval is addressed, but rather refer them to the fire department to make sure the fire department's aware that standard is, or they're requesting permit and the standard be satisfied. And the same with the building officials. So when they file for a building permit at the Jefferson County Community Development Department, the building official, plans reviewer, definitely coordinate with Jefferson County Fire and EMS to make sure that all those requirements that were identified way back in the land use review are addressed before they issue permits, before they start construction. So very much fire, Deschutes Valley Water, Public Works, all the agencies that oversee our infrastructure and fire life and safety requirements are integrated into this system pretty well. Developer may argue that too well, but there's lots of assurances in place so that those requirements are satisfied before construction starts.
Thank you.
Are there any more comments from the commission? All right, now we are reaching the point of deliberation. So depending upon how people feel, we can recommend approval, we can modify, we can deny it, or we can continue the hearing at a public date. So kind of need to get an idea of where everybody's at. Okay, so if I can get a motion.
So this is Mike, and I'll move to make a recommendation to the Madras City Council to approve the proposed comprehensive plan and development code text amendments in order to implement the maximum residential density standards as proposed this evening.
This is Commissioner Etter, and I second that motion.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
No one is opposed. The motion carries.
All right, Chair Irvine, I want to beat Commissioner Baker to the punch on something, but while we have a rare instance that we have a full council chambers, it's very likely that we may have a vacancy in the Planning Commission coming up, and that should anyone want to participate and fulfill their civic obligations to serve their community, this would be a great opportunity to serve in the Planning Commission. All great people, as you can see.
And we're just regular people. We all have different jobs. We are not experts in our field. That is exactly why this type of commission is here, is for everyday people to review the codes that come forward. So if you are interested in serving, it is a wonderful way to learn how the city works. It also is a great thing that you can give back to your community. So
thank you for that plug. My apologies, Dr. Baker.
All right, is there any additional discussion?
Yeah, so we will have a meeting on February 27th. Okay. And yes, I said that wrong. I'm getting my dates wrong. Thank you, Commissioner Kendall. The 21st of February. Yeah, correct. As you know, when Fatma's not here, things don't go well. So. No, just 2 weeks. 2 weeks from now. Yeah. No additional comments from staff.
Okay. I will be out of town on the 21st.
And then, Fatima, do you have the pieces of paper that we need to sign for if we're choosing to be here for next year?
I can make that happen.
That would be wonderful, because I keep meaning to print it out at home and it has not happened.
No problem.
Thank you. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, we can, yeah. Oh, is there?
Yes, thank you. I just want to make it official that this will be my last Planning Commission meeting. I will be stepping down, still be here in the community, but will not be able to serve on this commission much longer. So echo Commissioner Irving's, Chair Irving's comments. This is a phenomenal committee to sit on. If you enjoy what you saw tonight, come on back and do it again. So that's it.
Well, thank you for your service on the commission. It has been a rough couple years, especially with the job that you have, but trying to do meetings during COVID and everything was rough for everybody. So thank you for your service and wish you well.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker, for your public service. Appreciate that very much on behalf of staff.
Okay, anybody else? Yes?
February 27th, 5:30 p.m., right here in the council chambers. Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. We were confused as well. All right, with that, we will adjourn the meeting at 7:45.